We're joined on the phone by a downtown friend, writer extraordinaire, climber of monuments, Colin Fleming joins us. Hello, Colin.
How's it going, Mr. Kimball?
Very well, thank you. I understand a personal best at monument climbing was achieved recently.
Yeah, but I always feel like I've let you down if it's Tuesday and I haven't climbed on that day. But on Sunday, I did 15. And even though I do it all the time, I'm feeling it a bit in the calves after that. You're in there for a long time, my friend. You are just like taking an extended class, like a good hour and a half.
Oof. Hey, that's impressive, though, since most people would have a hard time doing it once.
It was worrisome because I was doing it, and I was leaving this trail of sweat, very sexy, up and down the monument. And then around, like, climb number 8 or 9, there was no more sweat. And I thought, is that how this is supposed to go, that you just kind of run out? And I think I might need to drink less coffee before I climb the monument and maybe have some water.
Yes, I'm no health expert, but that seems like a pretty good plan.
Yeah, I thought that was sound.
Well, today we want to talk death, specifically death and America's entertainment obsession with death. And it was in full bloom this past weekend between the movies and premium cable.
Sure. What were the movies? Because I think we could probably say this many weekends to different degrees, but obviously Game of Thrones, which I personally tried to watch once, and I didn't get very far, but you can't really avoid Game of Thrones, can you? You end up picking up little bits and pieces. It would be sort of like almost not knowing that Tom Brady was the quarterback of the Patriots, even if you weren't a football fan. And what I've gleaned from this is what I also gleaned from the sort of heyday of The Walking Dead was that people are tuning in, must-watch viewing, to see which pretend person perishes. It's very strange to me. And it's very lazy, I think, with anyone doing any sort of artistic undertaking, to put so much emphasis on, you know what, we don't really need to develop a plot or story or characters. Let's just do an old-school cliffhanger where people are just coming back to see if the people they've formed unnatural relationships with, because they don't have natural relationships in their lives, to see if those people are still with our show. And that's just very strange to me. That's what The Walking Dead was for the longest time. And I would watch some of that. I thought I should be up to date on a little bit of this. And it's like, okay, who's going to make it to next week? And all of the adverts were for that, all of the trailers, the teasers, everything was, who didn't die?
Well, and this week, from those who didn't like this episode of Game of Thrones, the Battle of Winterfell, the two complaints, one, it was too dark. You couldn't see what was going on. Okay. But the other was that not enough of the big names got killed off, that people were actually unhappy that some of those folks they had formed a relationship with lived through the battle.
There's always like one big name that has to be sort of the sacrificial lamb for ratings. And it's a very lazy way to create art. If you are killing someone in something you have created, a book, a film, an opera, whatever it may be, you need good reason to do that. It's not like you're just walking down the street in life and you vaporize, you spontaneously combust and you're gone. And that's kind of what a lot of writers do. And I see it in multiple forms of media right now, just this lazy catch-all of kill people, you'll come back, I don't have to develop the story, and etc. And it's just like, I don't really understand the appeal of that unless society itself is not exactly thriving. It was not an irony lost on me that for a while, the most popular show in this country was The Walking Dead, when it seems like so many people now themselves are The Walking Dead. You learn in, what, eighth grade chemistry that like attracts like. And I think there's a sort of magnetic pull between where people are at in their lives and this kind of lazy, Thanatos-friendly, artistic trend-setting.
How much of it do you think, Colin, is that in some of these shows, at least, and I've not seen, I'm not a Walking Dead person, I know I should at some point, but I haven't seen it yet, but certainly on Game of Thrones, people have People have died and come back. And is there some sort of safety, particularly in these fantasy or science fiction shows, where the death may or may not be permanent?
Sure. And I guess if you wanted to be cynical about it, you could say, well, Arthur Conan Doyle, he got sick with that Sherlock Holmes, and he killed him off, right? He goes over the falls with Moriarty and everything, and lo and behold, spoiler alert, we find in a later story, when the character is relaunched, that he didn't actually go into the falls. He scampered up, and it was fine, and he just hid out in, like, Malaysia for a while and didn't tell Watson, but he told his brother. And there's also this strange fetish, the death fetish, of, like, ranking the qualities, like, the putridity of the death, like, the artistic nature of the death. And Game of Thrones seems to me to be a show that attempts to one-up itself with the graphic nature of the death, the theatricality, the artificiality of the deaths, really. And I've seen enough of them, but I haven't followed them through the seasons. But I can still tell that it's like, okay, they must sit around the table, the writers, and say, what could we do? Could we make some, like, catapult do this and fly through the air and go through this guy's eye socket, that type of thing? And it's just like, what is the appeal? Somebody has to explain to me the appeal in this society where there's already so much violence and anger. What do people like about this?
Well, here's an interesting tweet that I just saw that relates directly to it. I don't know who this guy is, Kyle Brandt, but he tweeted, I miss the ruthlessness of Game of Thrones, the realism that said, we don't do Disney endings, people die here. Ned's death put the show on the map, the Red Wedding made it a legend, but now if your favorite character is about to die, don't worry, there's a corny last-second rescue about to save them. That's a bizarre take on things.
It's not realism. It's plastic. It's not earthen. Because the driver of the show is this obsession with these deaths and framing them a certain way. It's artifice. Artifice is not realism. It's the antithesis of realism. In life, which is realistic, things happen in sort of mosaic patterns where they're not necessarily linked. That's why Tolstoy was so good. If you want to read about, like, actual deaths that have meaning and even with a flair of theatricality, look at War and Peace, which is marking its 150th anniversary. Things just happen in that because they're the way things happen in life. In fact, someone once remarked that if life was a person out there and decided to write a book, life would write War and Peace. That is not what any of these shows are. You know exactly what you're getting when you go to it. And when you talk about the darkness, and I can just even right in my mind imagine the sort of blotty, inky cinematography and everything and how that's supposed to be artful. It's all plastic, and it's all about the death and the splatter and the anger. And you're out in your life, and I guess you think, like, this is escapism. Well, is it escapism? Because so many people harbor a lot of anger right now. And the world is just replete with anger and all sorts of deaths, even if they're not literal deaths. Click on anything, a Twitter feed each day. Go to the Daily Beast. Look at anything. Look at the news cycle. It's just perpetual motoric death. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm going home, and I am going to have some Doritos and enjoy some more death, a little D&D tonight.
Well, and you're right. It's not real. It's stylized. It has nothing to do with realism. And I think, for me, growing up, the most impactful, I think, fictional death, certainly on television, because you didn't expect it, even though you always knew it was a possibility, was the early episode of MASH when they unexpectedly killed off Colonel Henry Blake.
Sure. And people, right, they could not see that coming. And the way it was done was, think about this, it was off screen, right?
Right.
It was not something that you beheld. You beheld it mentally. And I think that creates such a much more potent punch, really. And when you think about, too, like great horror fiction, scare fiction, you'll note if you go all the way back through the Victorian era that in the scariest stories, people tend not to die. Because that's just so on the nose. How could you be so ignorant that you couldn't, like, expect that to be what you're going to get? And any great artist, and I would say it goes to for any great entertainment, but each has to undercut expectation. And I think I could just leap into Game of Thrones right now and have a pretty good idea after missing all of it and coming in season 8 or whatever it is, exactly what's going on, because I see it in so many other shows. I see it when I go on Netflix and I watch, like, the opening sequence, and it's like, oh, it's one of those. And I don't know why everything has to be so predictable and rote. I don't see what the entertainment value is, and I don't see what people are escaping from, because they're basically just going from one form of gratuitous violence and death to another that they just happen to be watching on their computer screen or their television. And why would you want more of that? I think it speaks to people's inability to go out there and find other things. I really believe that if you had a show about an amoeba and a Petri dish and it was hyped enough, everyone would go home and eat the Doritos and watch the amoeba and the Petri dish.
Well, I never understood movies like the Saw franchise, Hostel, some of the others that were essentially torture porn. To this day, I don't understand the draw to that kind of thing.
And if you do that kind of thing once, I would say that the entire enterprise is the novelty, to say, look, we could do this just outre, disgusting thing. But then they're like, sit tight. We have multiple sequels for you. And I would think there's some kind of correlation between danger to society and mental illness if you're actually, like, getting the Blu-ray of Saw 4 or Hostel 3 or whatever it may be. And again, you go in and you know exactly what you're going to be seeing. It's almost like torturing a mouse in a shoebox, which is illegal, but now you can watch somebody else do that and it comes under the banner of entertainment. And I really doubt that people are all of that. And who would be entertained by that? Like a prospective serial killer? Beyond that, and it's not like when you watch Night of the Living Dead or Dead of Night,
right,
or
right,
something like Bride of Frankenstein, that you're like, oh yeah, I need to reanimate some corpses tonight and have them do my bidding. You're not thinking like that, because what you're doing is you're wrestling with the ideas in those works that the characters are wrestling with. There are ideas. Where does death leave off and life begin if you are Frankenstein, right, in those old Boris Karloff films? What would happen if society was just overrun by people who are the Walking Dead in this metaphor for societal ills? And you think about all those great horror films and sci-fi films of the 1950s. They were so prescient. You watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers now, and at the time it was shocking. But it's almost like if you're a thinking person in this world, you are scared of a pack coming upon you and unleashing that cry that the pod people do, and then you're fleeing to some California highway. And you get the sense that the pod people are the ones who would be watching these sorts of shows. And I think we owe it to people and America to give better shows. I just think it's, oh yeah, you know what, this is a retread of this. We can pitch it as it's Game of Thrones meets Harry Potter, autopilot, stick it out there. And you're killing art, because everything that was ever any good from Beethoven's Ninth, oh, we're going to sing at the end, okay, to Sgt. Pepper, to Star Wars, when no one would do sci-fi films in the 1970s like that, to the early Disney films, every single thing that has ever lasted and been good and been so hugely popular that it's generational was new. And Game of Thrones is very popular right now, but it won't be generational.
Wise advice there. And expert analysis, as always, from writer Colin Fleming. Check out his work at colinflemminglit.com. Thank you, Colin. We'll see you next week.
Okay, my friend.